And we can take our Bibles out and turn once again to the book of Job. Although today I'm going to do something a little different regarding the scriptures. Normally, I don't put the scriptures that we're looking at up on the screen because I'm trying to encourage you to get out your Bibles, look at it, make your own notes in your Bible, whether it's paper, whether it's digital, and to help you just kind of own the passage and own the text in that way. But because we're going to be bouncing and moving around so much, I actually will be including them up on the screen today. And if you're a note taker, you may want to just get out your camera because we're going to be moving fast as we go along, and it's totally fine for you to take your notes through your camera. Also, just a quick side note from Pastor David and I and our families. We just want to say thank you so much for all the pastor appreciation that you guys did. We both commented on our own how sheepish we feel about that, because we can have an appreciation day for every single person here and the work and the effort that they exert towards the ministry and how they just give that offering to God. So, but you gave it to us, and so from us, both of us and our families, thank you very much. All right, well, picking up with Job, I'm going to start with something that maybe you guys aren't normally used to seeing or going towards, and that is I want to talk a little about 90s rock and roll. Alternative rock band Everclear. I actually met these guys in the Chicago airport once. Very interesting. And they came out with a big hit a while back called Father of Mine. And for those of you that know it, you'll know what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't, it's basically this man, Art Alexakis, I think is how you pronounce his name. It's his autobiography of how he felt abandoned by his father growing up when he was a child. And the song that he wrote, let me tell you something, it just sounds like pain. When you hear it, you hear the pain. There's a little bit of raw distortion in there, because, you know, that was 90s grunge rock. But in addition to that, there's an angry tone. There comes a point where he is absolutely shouting his lyrics. And there's so much unresolved emotion that comes out. If you ever watch the video on YouTube, boy, you really get a sense of the pain. And he expresses his fears. He talks a lot about the questions that he has for his dad who abandoned them. And here's just some of the lyrics. They go like this. Father of mine, tell me, where have you been? You know, I just closed my eyes and my whole world disappeared. Father of mine, take me back to the day, yeah, when I was still your golden boy, back before you went away. Sometimes you would send me a birthday card with a $5 bill. Yeah, I never understood you then, and I guess I never will. And then the chorus says it all. My daddy gave me a name, and then he walked away. That hit home with so many people, and I think there's a particular reason why this went high up in the charts, because it resonated with people. You'll look at some of the feeds that go along with a video or a song like this, and you just see all these people crying out, that's my story. I had one or both parents abandon me, and I feel unheard, and I've been unseen by the very one that should have been there for me. And through what's a distorted tune, you can find within it Alex's determination. My kid is never going to experience this. I won't do this to her. And in many ways, I feel like that song could have been written by Job, who also felt abandoned by his heavenly father. Now, we'll learn later on, he never was, but he sure felt like it. And he had some questions, and he shouted his questions out. And quite often, a lot of times, he feels like they just went out into silence. He's had friends come along to help, as you might say, but they have not done that. They have failed to provide help. In fact, they've actually done the opposite. They did a level of turning on him. You've heard of a person having troubles. They came along and they have troubled his troubles. Loved that term. And he went through various emotional responses as a result of the dialogue with them and the state of confusion and perplexity that he was going through and he was experiencing, which, by the way, you also have experienced when you went through deep pain. Or maybe I should say, you also will experience when you also go through deep pain. Today, I'm taking you through, are you ready for this? 16 chapters in the book of Job. So you better fasten your seatbelts. Take your seats, put them in the upright position, take your tray tables and fold them forward. Flight attendants are coming back for this one. You're in it, and it's going to be a fast and a bumpy ride all the way to hear all of what Job's responses were to the counsel of his friends. But I'm saving two chapters we're not going to cover today, chapters 19 and chapters 28, because both of those deserve their own Sunday sermon. So we'll catch up on those at another time. And today what I'm going to do is I'm just going to kind of chart with you Job's emotional roller coaster, as you'll see, and the state of confusion that he goes through as he wrestles with what's happening to him. And his confusion, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to become our classroom for when we go through something like this. So Job began his tragedy, as you will recall in chapter 1, with strong faith but real pain. Again, going all the way back to chapter 1, you remember what he said? The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And then he went on to say, shall we accept good from God and not adversity? Now, a little important note about that word accept, shall we accept. The word accept there might be better translated, should we not better cooperate with God in what he sends our way? And when he says that, he's not saying, now you just grin and bear it. You know, just keep that stiff upper lip. But rather, whatever happens, we need to do something. We need to continue to love God. We need to continue to trust him despite the perplexity and the range of emotions that we might go through, and keep walking with him despite the perplexity that we're going through. And that is strong faith, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes people have asked me, you know, will you pray for this and will you pray for this, that this will be the outcome? And of course I do, but I include something else. I'm also going to pray that you have a strong faith as a result of it, no matter what God's answer is in the end. Well, as time passed and Job continued to go through what he was going through, his pain increased, it deepened, and it did so significantly. And Job begins somewhat of a breakdown. And we looked at that in chapter 3 when we looked at his lament and his expression of pain to God, of his loss and his suffering. And this guy was deeply honest about it, which I want you to note something. God invites your honesty and your pain with him. You're to bring that forward. One of the things I find interesting, though, is that later on we're going to find God is also deeply honest with Job. That's what a depth of relationship will do. You can be that way with one another, and he'll find that. But anyway, Job's three friends showed up, Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar. We've looked at them, and their basic theology wound up being, God, he blesses those who do good, and if you do bad, you're not going to get the blessing. He's going to hit you. And that's a very neat and somewhat tidy and controllable theology, right up until the point you have to live it. And then you find, not only does that not work, that can't be true. It isn't true, and it doesn't fit the formula. And after Job's friend Eliphaz came to him for a little bit and began to respond to try to explain, well, here's what's happening, Job, and here's what's going your way, we get his first response. It's in chapters 6 and 7. And that response, I'm going to summarize it with this word. It's one of anger. He has anger. He's angry at a lot of things. First, he's angry at the magnitude of his suffering. In chapter 6, verse 12, he says, is my strength the strength of stones, or is my flesh bronze? He's saying, this is way more than I can carry and I can endure. And he's angry also at his friends as they've come along at him. Chapter 6, 14, for the despairing man, there should be kindness from his friend. Because they're more interested in arguing doctrine with him than they are in being a friend being a friend to someone in great need. And finally, here's the other one. He's also very angry at God. Chapter 7, verse 11, he says, I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. Verse 20, what have I done to you, watcher of men? Why have you set me as your target? Now that's his emotion. Is he wrong for feeling it? Everybody say no. No, he's not. Anger in and of itself is not sin. In fact, the Apostle Paul highlights this in Ephesians 4:26, where he says, in your anger, do not sin. King David, did he cry out in anger in several of the Psalms? Yes, he did. We see it many times. You can look at Jeremiah's writings in his book, as well as the other one, Lamentations, that he wrote. You see his anger come out many times. And even Jesus was known to maybe occasionally flip a table or two in the temple of the money changers. But here's the deal. You got to be real careful with your anger. Be real careful. Are we going to be angry at injustice? Yes, we are. I am at times. Are there going to be cries that we make to God? Are we going to struggle? Are we going to wrestle with this along the way? Yes, we are. We will. And there is a place for your anger. Here's one of the dangers, though. Do not let your anger go sour and turn into a thing called bitterness. I was talking with an individual this week, and we made this comment. Bitterness is the poison you drink waiting for somebody else to die. It has a way of going inside of you. It's not outward, and it's not helpful. An anger that is unchecked, an anger that you do not give your friends permission to come alongside with you and walk with you, but also call you out maybe if need be, you can be in real danger if you just allow that to take free rein in your life. And Job, man, this guy was angry. He is angry at what was happening. And I know you have been too, and I have too. There's a place for it. But it's very interesting. When you look at Job and when he expressed this anger and he just kind of let it go, it didn't solve any of his problems. He might have said, oh, I feel a little bit better, but what we find is he really didn't feel any better. In fact, if anything, his circumstances and his situation maybe just got a little bit worse with time, not because of his anger, but it wasn't cured by him just expressing it. And so Bildad, his other friend, he has a chance to sit down. He's listening to all this that Job is saying, and, you know, he's out to be a friend, but instead he chooses to be a theologian, and he just comes back and he says, you know, bad things happen to bad people. You just accept it, Job. And it's in chapters 9 and 10 that Job's emotions seem to move a little bit further down, this time moving him towards despair. And so he will admit God's mighty power. He looks at God and says, yes, I see that you have that kind of power. Here's what I don't get. Why are you silent? Why don't you take that mighty power and use it to come help me out and be of assistance? Use it for my sake and not against me. And in chapter 9:22, he looks at the fate of everyone to say, it is all one. Therefore, I say, he destroys the guiltless and the wicked. And for him, it's a question of injustice with God. You know, why would a good God allow this kind of injustice to occur in my life? What's happening here? And there are things in this world that are going to affect our lives in a terrible way, and it has nothing to do with anything that you might have done. But the tendency for all of us is when that bad thing happens, what do? We go right to the top management. We go right to God and say, okay, I'm putting this at your feet. Now, you got to help me walk through this. You got to give me an understanding. And Job is both angry, but he's also despairing. Commentator Robert Fial wrote an excellent book on this. And he gave this one illustration, a true story of a man who went to go visit his daughter in the hospital. And she was dying of cancer. And it just happened to be her birthday. So he goes to the store, and he bought her a very special cake. And he's taking it from the store, and he's going to the hospital to go present it to her and have a little birthday party. And on the way, he stopped in a church. And he went in that church, and he just put that cake down, and he knelt, and he prayed, and he prayed. And he begged God, save my little girl's life. You know, she's so precious. Would you do that? And so he got up, and he went on to the hospital. And when he got there, as soon as he walked in the room, the nurses met him. And they said, we're very sorry, but your daughter passed away about 3 minutes ago. And he knew if he hadn't stopped to pray, if he'd have just gone on, he might could have seen her in her last few minutes. And in the hospital, he did not say, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. It's not what he did at all. Instead, he picked up his cake and he ran back to the church and he opened the doors and he took that cake and he flung it at the cross that was on the wall where he had been praying. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call scalding agony. That's what he had. That is where Job is. And it has brought him to a place almost of utter despair. He can't leave his state. He is stuck, and he wants out, but he can't get there. Chapter 9:33. He wants someone to mediate for him. He says there's no umpire between us who may lay his hand upon us both. He's like, I want an audience with God. I want to talk with this one, and I got some questions for him, but he won't answer me. He won't even give me a court. He won't give me anything, and I want that individual who will step in. The bottom line, I think this guy, he could write the song again, Father of mine, where have you gone? I don't see you. Who can I appeal to? I don't even know of anyone that I can go to. Many of you have been there too. You've been in that place and you fell into despair. The situation was hard. It wasn't turning around. You had screams and you just felt like they went out and they just kept going out into space and they just dissipated out there, but nobody was there to receive it. Well, you're in good company because that's where Job was too. Instead of providing help, Zophar shows up. You never want a Zophar to come into your life at a point like this. And all he does is he just takes Job and he just coldlessly puts him down further into his pain. And now Job is actually hitting what I'll call a rock bottom. He actually has a terror of God in chapters 12 through 14. And after he's paused to consider the wisdom of God and how God works, he can't make sense out of his life and where things are. And he cries out in chapter 13, verse 21, God, remove your hand from me and let not the dread of you terrify me. You know, it's one thing to be in misery. It is another thing entirely when you start going, does God actually hate me? Is that where I am in life? In a place where he can't stand me and he's going to do everything he can to destroy me and wreck me and live in opposition to me? And you feel that sense of powerlessness. And Job, when he goes through this, he was already frail. Now he's really frail. And chapter 14 is all about that. In chapter 14, verse 19, he says, water wears away stones. Its torrents wash away the dust of the earth. So you destroy man's hope. The word that I personally would use for that is depression. He's now gone into that route. Hopelessness with theology still in your head, but no warmth in your heart. That is what depression can do to you. That was the missionary psychiatrist Frank Lane who once said, where being itself is mortally threatened, well-being is also lost. And you get it. When you begin to question whether life is even worth living, is there any purpose behind what's going on here? Before long, your will to endure and to go through this, it just begins to wane, doesn't it? And you start to find yourself in retreat. And Job is on the brink of losing all of this. And some of you have been too. In fact, some of you might be there right now, where you're struggling with this, where you're losing it all. And there is almost a sense of terror of God. And even if you know him and you think he loves you, you're terrified that his plan won't align with yours, and that scares you to death. And it has me too. And you ask, is God, are you doing your job? What did I do? Well, all three friends have now had a run with Job. Eliphaz says, okay, I'm back up at bat. I want to get another run at this guy. And so he goes after Job. And then we find in chapter 16 and 17, Job kind of almost, it isn't that he quits listening to his friends, but he almost comes to this decision of, I got to just stop and think a little bit about God and what I know about God. And it's here we begin to find that there's a little bit of hope that arises in his life. But again, it doesn't come from his friends. It comes from what he knows about God. Chapter 16, verse 19, he says, even now, behold, my witness is in heaven and my advocate is on high. So when he feels like, gosh, I feel like I've just been totally forgotten by God, he believes, but wait a minute, I may not be able to find what I'm looking for in this life, but if God is good and God is holy and there's an afterlife, then at some point along the way, I have to encounter him. And then this will get resolved, either in this life or the next. But I'll tell you something. When he's here, you know where his faith is? It is all the way down to the size of a pilot light. Not a lot of heat coming off of it. It's barely there and flickering, but it's still there. And it hasn't gone out. And he continues to look to the God that even though he has in his mind and his heart, God's supposed to be there, it doesn't feel like it right now. The hope that he has here, it gets expanded even further in chapter 19. And this chapter, again, as I said, it's significant enough. I'm not going to cover it today. I'm going to save that. That's going to be the special chapter that we're going to look at next week. But it is sort of the high point in this vacillating series of emotions. Now, when I say the high point, don't think that it's high. It's not as low. Maybe that's the way I need to put it. But there's really solid truth that we get from that, and we're going to investigate it next week. But then even after Job goes through this, now his emotions begin to go back down. And he starts to wrestle with God by the questions that he has for God in the following chapter 21. And so he's basically saying, God, Are you sure you know what you're doing? Because I am not. I'm not that sure. And he begins to look at the way the world operates, and he sees inconsistencies in terms of good people suffering and bad people just having the great life. In fact, in 21:17, he asks this, how often is the lamp of the wicked put out? Or does their calamity fall on them? In other words, it's kind of like your kids do. You know, well, what about them? What's happening to them? But there really is some legitimacy in that they're not following God. They're not obeying God, but they seem to be flourishing. And you are, and you're going down. And then in verse 34, he begins to confront the theology of his friends who've been telling him, you know, hey, just realize it's all covenant. You know, you do good, get good. You do bad, you get bad. And Job responds in verse 34 with, how then will you vainly comfort me, for your answers remain full falsehood. Job recognizes, even here in the book, guys, I hear what you're telling me. It's not true. I don't experience it. I know it's not true, and you guys are in error. Sometimes the righteous person will suffer. And he's, as he's going through this, he's realizing the math doesn't work. You know, he's taking heaven's books and he's putting it down. He's trying to balance it and reconcile. He's like, it doesn't work. I don't see it. And it's a struggle. And you see Job tempted to see the world much like, I would say, a deist does. And you know, with deism, there's a belief that there is a creator. There's somebody that manufactures and generates everything in the world. But with deism, this God is one that just like takes a watch and winds it, builds it, constructs it, winds it up, puts it on the shelf, and then goes to Spain. You know, and so it just continues to run. But if something breaks, if something's not right, you don't have anybody to consult with. He's not present. And in many ways, he's beginning to feel that way. He's got a lot of questions, but he's not getting any answers. And that's another one, ladies and gentlemen. You have definitely been here. And I have too. When you're looking and going, it doesn't line up, God. I'm not getting it. It doesn't make any sense. And then you start going even further. Anybody ever ask this question of themselves? Actually, does God even exist? Yeah, we have, and pain will bring you there. Does he even exist? And am I a fool for trusting in him? It's not working out. Job wrestled with this. And when you struggle with that, you're in good company. That's another reason why it's good to have fellow believers around you when you're in that point. And they can walk with you and will be sympathetic and tactful, but they will help you in seeing light and seeing life in light of the truth. Well, in chapters 23 and 24, now he's going to respond to Bildad, who came at him. And Bildad just gave a real short treatise, psalm, or whatever you want to call it, of God's creative power. And his response is, in essence, I'd love to meet with God, but again, I would like to see the power that you boast about and that you speak on. I'd like to kind of see it come my way and help me out and be of benefit to me. And in his pain, he just wants to know that God is with him. But you know what he really feels? He feels estranged from God. He says in 23 verse 3, oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to his seat. I would present my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments, and I would learn the words which he would answer and perceive what he would say to me. But then he goes through chapter 24 and he starts looking at all the wrongs that he sees that happen in the world. And he's like, but I see all this stuff happening and I don't really see God do anything about it. You know, it just continues to, these evils keep happening. I was thinking about when Justin was making that prayer earlier and just looking at the events of the world and just thinking, yeah, there's a lot of times we look at that and we go, are you even doing anything? Can we get an answer? But I want to highlight something with him, with Job. So far in all this stuff that he's doing, he hasn't sinned. Did you catch that? He was angry at God. That wasn't sin. He felt estranged from God. His feelings aren't lining up with truth, but God didn't say that he's in sin. These are these feelings that all of us feel, and they will bounce back and forth. And that's what happens, ladies and gentlemen, when you're in relationship with someone. You know, as for those of you that are married, or you got parents or kids in the home, you know, you have these feelings that go back and forth, and you wrestle with them. And frankly, the depth of your relationship has to do with to what degree you will wrestle with them. You don't wrestle with them, you don't have a relationship. Well, he's got this with God, and he's feeling like singing, Father of mine, where have you been? And I haven't found you, and I feel estranged. And when you feel that way, you're in good company. You're not the only one. Bildad's brutal response to all this is basically to say, here's the deal. God is too big. He's too important. He's got too much going on. His daytimer's full. His calendar's all loaded. You know, leave him alone. He's too high for you, and he's inaccessible to you. And so Job starts to reflect on his own life in the wake of that. And he responds in chapters 26 and 27 by basically saying, my conscience is clear before God. My heart is right. In 27:6, he says, I hold fast to my righteousness, and I will not let it go. My heart does not reproach any of my days. So again, he's not going to fake a confession to try to get God to sort of change what's going on around him. Instead, he stays honest before God. That is worship. Staying honest before God. Taking your heart before him. When God reveals sin, you deal with it. That's worship. But if the sin is not revealed, you don't know. There's an aspect of worship that happens here. And I think all of us have been at the point where we had nothing. But by God's grace, we held on nonetheless. Divinely inspired to remain despite the situation. Ladies and gentlemen, when you do that, it is worship. It isn't the fun sing-songy kind. You kind of long to have that one, but it's still an act of worship. Chapter 28 then moves to, that's a very significant chapter again, so much so that in 2 weeks we're going to spend the entire Sunday on that one. But for now, we're going to close out by looking at Job's last monologue, and that happens with his final cry in chapters 29 to 31. He looks back at the old days, basically, when he felt like things were good. My life was good. Things like seemed good with God. But in verse 30, after reflecting on the good old days, he comes to realize, but I'm not living in the good old days. I'm in today right now. And he ends chapter 31 with the last call. It's in verse 35. He said, oh, that I had one to hear me. Let the Almighty answer me. And then he'll conclude chapter 31. Well, the author of the book will conclude it by saying, the words of Job are ended. Now, he's going to speak again. It's not going to be until the last chapter, 42. And when he speaks, it ain't going to be like he has been. His tone will have changed completely. And we'll discover why. It's a powerful moment. But he won't speak like this again. Now, I bring it all sort of to summarize. Remember Satan's challenge of God? He looked at Job and he says, does Job fear you for nothing? Of course Job fears you. You're a sugar daddy. You give him good things. You protect him. You give him all that stuff, you know. You're not worthy of worship, God. All people want is what you get out of him. You remove those things, you're not worthy of worship. And he most certainly will turn on you. And what we've seen in this swinging of emotions is throughout his anger, his despair, his confusion, sometimes silence, he keeps clinging to God. The emotional response does not mean that he has rejected God, but he's struggling with it. And despite all these emotions, I just want to give you the reminder, he still doesn't have an answer as to why. Why did my kids die? Why did I lose everything? Why have I lost my health? Why am I in physical pain? His perplexity is still every much present. In fact, you can kind of look at it and you see the chart, how the loop goes, and you can almost argue he's in the same place he was at the end of all these emotions as he was at the beginning. There isn't really this progress that he makes between him and God. But it's in this instance, his honest struggle in the end is what's going to keep Satan silent. Powerful thing. And it's my reminder in this book that sometimes the greatest act of worship might be simply not walking away from God in your pain. An act of worship. Job has wrestled, but he has not forsaken God. And we all struggle, but our struggling, ladies and gentlemen, is not sin. It isn't. God's call to us is to never say, you can't struggle with this. You can't feel these things with this. Instead, the call is, struggle well. Struggle well. How do you struggle well? I'll come back to that in a moment. So what do we do with all this? From Job's classroom, you know, of suffering, what do we pick up? Let me just give you three quick things. The first one, and I've said this before, it's been a repeat item, but you know what? it's good to repeat things because we need to remember them. And the first one is this: don't automatically assume that because you're going through pain, you're necessarily being punished by God. All right? It isn't necessarily the case. Sometimes those kinds of things will be the consequences of sin. And when we have pain, we are wise to stop and to pray and to consider what's going on. What's God doing in my life? Am I contributing to this? But you don't necessarily have to go find that something under a rock. You know, God will reveal it to you if it's there. But sometimes there won't be anything. It's just living in a broken world. And so the call, you're going to be able to worship God despite your circumstances, but it's going to feel hard. But don't necessarily make it about, I must have done something. And that brings us to the second point. And this one also is a repetition of some of the things we've looked at from Sunday to Sunday. And that is, don't weaponize your theology. Because you can have some very good and right truths about what's going on, but inappropriately apply them pastorally and personally to other people. And you can do this with other people, and you can do this with yourself. You know, you will hyper-analyze yourself and bring this stuff to bear in ways that, frankly, aren't that healthy, which is, again, why it's so important to have those people in your life that will be good friends, that will help you to see things in their reality and not necessarily when you're on this continuum of emotions that are just swaying back and forth. But you be real careful how you apply truth in these kinds of situations when you're walking with others. Tact. Is that important? You better believe it is. Tact is highly important. Tenderness. And you know what? Sometimes it might even mean delay. You have the truth. You know what to speak. Sometimes you just need to wait for tomorrow before you do it. And we need the Spirit of God to help us when we're helping other people with this. Third one, and finally, it sounds simplistic, but hold on to God. Hold on when God feels silent. Hold on to Him. He is worthy. He is holy. He does know what's going on, and your feelings are going to be all over the map. You won't feel like it, and this is where your feelings are going to have to catch up with the faith that you have that God is not letting you go. Remember, Job didn't get an answer. He didn't get the why. Why'd I go through this? Never happens. Sometimes you're not going to get the why. I got things in my life. I would really like to know why. I don't have them. Here's what we cling to. It's not the answer to why we're going through it. We cling to the who, not the why. Who God is. That He is sovereign even over the suffering that I'm going through. That He is sovereign even when I don't understand Him. I'm looking at the tapestry through a straw, and I see bits and pieces, but I can't put the whole together. Only He can see the whole. And I have to trust Him. Isaiah 43:2 says, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And He will. And I want to just give you something to consider, all right? This is the part you need to put an asterisk on. I can't give you a verse, quote a verse for you on this. This is pure speculation on my part. But I think that if Job had lived in our day, and he could have heard the gospel, and seen how far God Himself would go with an undeserved pain, he would have known that God had never abandoned him. He questioned it. But if he had had the gospel, he would have known God won't abandon me. Because he would have been able to look and go into the scriptures and then been able to see that Jesus Himself was the one who, hanging on the cross, said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me and abandoned me? Jesus entered the very silence that Job feared the most. And He entered it for us. And Jesus was ultimately the only really, truly innocent one to undergo a suffering. And Jesus is the mediator that Job so desperately longed for. 1 Timothy 2 says, there is one God and one mediator also between God and mankind, the man Christ Jesus. He's it. And Jesus is the only one who can take that hand and put one on man, and He can take one and put it on God, and then He can reconcile and bring us together. Because otherwise, the two can never come. That He is the only bridge that can span that chasm. And Jesus was abandoned. Job felt abandoned. He wasn't. Jesus actually was by God. the Father on the cross so that you and I would never have to be. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how much God loves you. So today, if your life feels a whole lot like a 90s grunge rock band ballad, a little bit distorted, and there's things that are going on that are unresolved in your mind, and it's full of pain, you can know this. Your God did not walk away. Instead, he walked up a hill, and he carried that cross with him on your behalf for you. And that means in the silence of your suffering that you may be going through today, he's still here for you. For he himself has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. Folks, the gospel according to Job, while it's going to come at you with somewhat of a distorted frequency and tone, you can still find within it the melody of his presence and his grace and his love.